This week, on a special episode of WebMD's Health Discovered podcast, we're taking a closer look at a common form of lung cancer that accounts for 85% of all cases.
When I first heard the words, "you have lung cancer," I was in shock.
It's a diagnosis that changes everything. So what does it really mean to advocate for yourself when you're living with non-small cell lung cancer? Listen to Health Discovered on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hello, hello, I'm Malcolm Gladwell, host of the podcast Smart Talks with IBM. I recently sat down with IBM's chairman and CEO, Arvind Krishna, and I asked him, how can companies use AI to its fullest potential to create smarter business?
My one advice to them, pick areas you can scale. Don't pick the shiny little toys on the side.
Mm-hmm. For example,
if anybody has more than 10% of what they had for customer service 10 years ago, they're already 5 years behind. If anybody is not using AI to make their developers who write software 30% more productive today, with the goal of being 70% more productive.
Yeah, wow.
So we are not asking our clients to be the first experiment on it. We say, you can leverage what we did. We're happy to bring out all our learnings, including what needs to change in the process, because the biggest change is not technology. It's getting people to accept that there's a different way to do things.
To listen to the full conversation, visit ibm.com/smarttalks.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Today on The Grave Talks, a conversation with Sean Barry Farewell, author of Fallen from the Light. What if dying wasn't the end, but the beginning of something far more extraordinary? Sean Barry Farewell, author of Fallen from the Light, shares his powerful and deeply personal story. Diagnosed with a rare and aggressive form of terminal cancer, Sean faced unimaginable pain and fear. But in the darkest moment of his life, on the night he flatlined, everything changed. He crossed over, stood before God, and came back with a message that would alter his understanding of life, death, and everything in between. Sean's journey is filled with profound encounters with spirits, angels, and even darker forces. At the heart of it all is Gloria, a radiant guardian angel he believes was sent to him by God. Gloria's presence offered unwavering comfort, wisdom, and guidance through his most harrowing moments, both in the physical and spiritual realms. From supernatural visions to battles of faith, Sean's story is one of courage, revelation, and hope. His story is a reminder that there's more to this world and the next than meets the eye. Today on The Grave Talks, Sean Barry Farewell, author of Fallen from the Light. Sean, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today about your book called Fallen from the Light. Congratulations. What does it feel like to have that out in the world?
It feels a sense of relief.
You've been working on it a long time.
15 years, 3 rewrites.
It's interesting to me because when I was reading the book, at one point you said you started writing the book, so that would have been like 2010. Mm-hmm. And when as I read the rest of the book, a lot of things happened after that. The book wasn't meant to be finished until now.
Well, I actually had the idea back in 2000, but I was contemplating it was just going to be about my battle with cancer to help cancer patients. Again, life throws you a curveball and you get distracted and you kind of put it on the back burner. And then it was 10 years later when something was telling me inside, it's time to start writing the book.
See, you got to listen to that inner voice. So many people, they get those feelings and they don't go with it. And so I'm glad that you did, because this is really an autobiography.
It truly is. I try to put, you know, some of the key points of the universal experiences, the supernatural, the paranormal, but also a human life struggling physically, mentally, financially, and then having the universe dump all the stuff on him at the same time. And nobody knew what was going on. I had to keep things pretty much quiet and try to deal with all this stuff.
And I think, too, on top of that, because it even goes deeper, it's kind of more, too, about a life's journey and purpose and looking at your mm-hmm. life and seeing the purpose in your life and seeing, too, how, and we will get into this, how, mm-hmm. you know, experiences come back around in your life sometimes and just
so
the
do.
Struggles of having to overcome things and learning the lessons that you learn along the way when you do go through cancer treatments and all the things that life throws at you.
Even through the kitchen sink cabinet.
It kind of did. Just... You're like... Now, so at the beginning of the book, it kind of starts with a conversation between you, God, and Gloria. Could you explain Gloria?
For people who, I'm sure most people know about guardian angels, when your soul is created, it gets assigned a guardian angel, and they're with you for eternity. They don't leave you. And I usually call them here on earth like a guidance counselor. They are with you on every journey, even when you come back to live another life. And when I was young, I used to have these dreams where I was in heaven, and they were strong dreams. And I would have visions where I'm having conversations with people that are deceased, with God himself and the angels. And these dreams were peaceful. They weren't scary. I just felt that, you know, waking up, you know, you're just a young child. You're just kind of wondering, okay, like, what kind of dream am I having here? But this was the part to get me prepared for what was actually about to come in my life.
And could you go into that just a little bit?
Well, I mean, the first time when I was able to sort of recognize Gloria was when I was about 5 years old. I had a severe asthma attack, and back then they didn't have a lot to treat asthma. They do today now. They have the better knowledge and medicine to treat it, but back then they thought I was going to die. Mm-hmm. And at 5 years old, you have no concept of death. And I remember being in the hospital. My oxygen levels were down. They were low, and they had me in a tent trying to put it back into my lungs. And I remember it was late at night. There was this woman that would show up, and there was a glow around her. And she made me feel at peace because I was scared. I mean, I didn't want to be in the hospital. But it was Gloria showing her presence for the first time. And she didn't have to speak because it was through the consciousness she was letting me know that everything is going to be all right. And I'm not going to leave you. I'm always going to be with you. So that was a comfort. Thank God for a miracle, because I was able to survive that bad asthma attack. And of course, I went home and continued the journey at that point. But it was a nice feeling knowing that she's going to show up many more times in my life.
And in fact, she's just actually a constant in your life. Would you say that? That you've kind of experienced her throughout your entire life.
I think because of the contract I sort of signed with God by coming back and trying to share a message, you know, I was warned that if I do take this task, that people were going to hurt me, abandon me, try to discredit me, and try to kill me. So God was like, do you still want to do this? And I was like, I do want to do this because you're my heavenly Father and you've created me, you've given me life, and I would be honored to do this. And then it was like I was zapped right to 1964 of my birth.
Is that something, because that's how the book starts, is that something that is a memory for you? Or
yes.
Okay, because I was wondering how that came about, because it really was, you know, and I have talked to people who have, you know, maybe gone to a hypnotherapist and they've recovered uncovered things like that, or recovered, I guess both of those might work in a way.
But past life aggressions.
Yeah. So I was wondering if you had done that.
Actually, I would love to do that. Because my dreams are strange. I feel that a lot of my dreams are showing me my past lives. I had this one dream where I was a gladiator and I'm in a ring and I was the greatest gladiator and the fans loved me. And then I kind of relate to it because when I was young, I was really good at sports. I was a competitor. And I'm thinking, where do I get this from? But I believe through your past lives, you bring a piece of you. But that's something I've actually considered, if I could find somebody who could put me under hypnosis and pull this out, because I've watched a few shows on this and it was pretty impressive to see what was coming out of these people.
Well, I just interviewed a woman who does that, so I'd be happy to pass her information along to you.
I would love to talk to her.
Yeah, that's the lady I was just telling you about, Karen Cubico. I always want to say it Cubico, but it's Cubico.
But,
yeah, I'll email you her information because that's what she does. So I had her on a couple weeks ago talking about her book. So it was interesting to read your book because the two of you both really got me thinking about life's purposes, why we're here, why we encounter the people we do along the way, the places we go, in your case, apartment you lived in for a couple years that was very profound in your life then and later. So I just thought it was interesting to read both of your books, and they both really got me thinking about the journey that we're all on, you know?
You know, and I threw a lot of things in there. I try to keep certain things short. I don't want to drag some things on, but I talk about where animals are your spirit detectors, and I've had two different experiences with two different dogs in a 20-year gap where I had a major experience with a spirit. Numerology, premonitions, you know, there was so much going on trying to, you know, understand what was happening. But getting to the house, which I think a lot of people are going to be interested in hearing, that was to me probably the beginning of what was going to follow. I had no idea how big this was at the time when I moved into this house, but if I would have known what I know now, would I've moved in that house? But you see, that's the thing about your life. It is written out for you. Your purpose is to serve, is to share that light with other people, to help them. And sometimes you have to do the ultimate sacrifice.
Which is really what you did. But when you moved into the house, you were young. Young guy, moved in there with your brother and another friend?
Mark, yeah.
Yeah.
Mark grew up with us too. And, you know, it was strange too because, Carol, my brother was living with me at my other place and he moved in there. And I figured, okay, I'm going to have my place to myself again. And I'm going to have some peace and quiet. But changes happen. And in about a month's time, I then moved in with my brother Scott and my friend Mark, and it was me and Bear, and we had our own room. And it wasn't long before the energy, the activity started in that house. It was affecting us right off the bat.
And it was a very old house that had been turned into apartments.
Yeah. Built in 1830, it was on almost 200 acres of land. So you had to be quite wealthy to live in that place. We had a business politician who lived there. But it was in around the late 1800s, early 1900s, is when this other individual who moved in there, a very wealthy man, but he was the kind of man that wanted respect. But he also had a dark past. He just hated women. And this is where these things started happening in the house, where the spirits were now trying to communicate with me.
The house had to have just felt very oppressive and dark, did it?
You know, Carol, people would come into my place. They would have a bad feeling. Like they said, they would always say, I feel like someone's watching me. Well, they were right. There was a lot of people watching. And then there was that incident with my friend Donna, which really shook me.
Oh, share that.
So I lived, this house was downtown Montreal. I was very close to the clubs. I met Donna there. We went to school together. We're just friends. I said to Donna, I'll walk you to, we call it the Metro, but it's a subway system. They call it Metro. And I said, I'll take you to the Metro, but let's just stop off to the house, say hi, because she knew my brother, and just pop in and say hi to Scott. And I got to get my dog, Bear. He's got to probably go out and do his business. And then I'll take you to the Metro. And she said, okay, great. We had a great time walking to my place. We were laughing. It's like we were, you know, coming back from a comedy club. I walk in the apartment through the front door, and I'm heading towards my bedroom trying to see where my brother is. Donna's behind me, but not, she's a bit of a distance, but she stops, and I'm looking at her, and her face just completely changes from this happy, laughing person to terrified. And she takes her hands and she puts it around her throat and she's crying. And she says, I can't stay here. And she runs out of the apartment. So I chase her and I catch up to her. And she's literally begging me not to bring her back in there. And I said, okay, Donna, not a problem. I'll get my dog and I'll take you to the Metro. And I took her to the Metro. She didn't say a word to me. And the strangest thing is I've reached out to her in 2012 to try and talk about this. She just would not respond. So it's been like 38 years. And I just recently saw my Facebook page. She said she's going to buy the book. And I'm thinking maybe she's finally going to tell me what she saw. I know what she saw, but I wanted to hear it from Donna.
And the way this person treated women, I'm going to guess that that's who obviously she was picking up on. It had to have been terror. Overwhelmed.
I'm gonna. I tell people when I talk to people about this, I know exactly what she saw, but I'm waiting for Donna to tell me. She saw the dark spirit and his son, and the victims, all women, and they were all strangled to death in that house. They had a hired hand who would lure the prostitutes into the house where they were strangled to death. That's the thing, is that. There were times at night I would be sleeping and I could hear constant walking going on in the apartment. And I thought my brother and Mark, they were having a party. So I open up the door to say, hey guys, keep it down. And the walking would stop. And this was constant, constant walking. And I was kind of figuring out, okay, maybe it's in my mind. It's an old house. It creaks, it cracks. But one night, well, early morning, 5:30 is when someone paid me a visit.
And who do you think that was?
It was him, the dark spirit.
Ugh. That just gives me goosebumps.
I lived on the main floor, Carol. So it would be so easy for someone to crawl through my window into my bedroom. And that's what I thought it was when I first started to focus my eyes. And I'm seeing a man sitting there at the edge of my bed just looking at me. And my brain is now working overtime. It's going, okay, I'm going to grab you and I'm going to throw you at the window. And I remember lifting my body up to say, what the? It was like a flash. And I saw it go to the ceiling and spin around like a whirlpool. And this is actually the first time I got to experience spirit energy and actually saw it. And I remember looking around the room afterwards wondering, okay, am I losing my mind?
Mm-hmm.
But my roommate, Mark, a few weeks later, we have a conversation. And I shared my experience. And he looked at me and he told me that he fell asleep in the living room. And he saw the shadow figure of a man on the bathroom door. And he was watching it. And of course, he didn't want to say anything until I opened up and shared my experience. But it gets even better because there was the two ladies that lived around the building in one of the other apartments. And we have a laundromat, but you have to go outside to go to the laundromat. It was a separate building part. And you had to go through, it's kind of like a maze. You had to walk about 10 feet. And then you have to make a left and go another 10 feet. And then you go into a room. There's the laundry machine. And there was times where Bear would come with me and he'd be looking down the hall while I'm putting stuff in the washing machine. And his head would be turning and twisting. And I'm thinking, oh, maybe somebody's coming to use the machines because everybody shared the laundry room. And I would look over. There was nobody there. I'm thinking like, Bear, what are you looking at? And the strange thing too about that is that as you start to walk now to leave, you got to walk now another 10 feet, make a right, and then make another 10 feet, and then you're back outside. But when I went the first 10 feet, this place was like an oven. It was like so hot because it was the summertime. But I hit this cold patch. Like I felt like I was in a freezer. Like the hair of my arms were standing. I thought that was really, really weird. And once I walked past that, it went back to being warm again. So something was standing right there. I couldn't put my finger on it. So I just ignored it. I went home. A few days later, it's about 8 o'clock at night. Someone's banging at our door and it's the two ladies and they're all freaked out. I remember walking out sort of, you know, being a smart, you know what? And I said, oh, so you saw the ghost. Now, I never said he or she. I just said, hey, so you saw the ghost. I was just being smart. And the lady's name was Dolores, and she looked at me, and she said, you've seen him? And that's when I just kind of looked at her like, we need to talk. And we started to share stories because they were experiencing the same guy in their apartment. But what took place in the laundry room is the two ladies were in there, and they went to hit the light, and it wasn't working. And they were in pitch black darkness. She said that someone walked up behind her and just breathed on her neck. She felt like that.
Oh, ooh.
And that's why they ran out of there and they came to our place. And the thing about the story is that the hired hand who used to lure the prostitutes in that house, that's where he hung himself.
You have to wonder about him, too. He was the hired help. He might not have had any choice. You know, they would have harmed him. He might have been racked with guilt.
That's why he hung himself. Yeah. Because you got to remember back then, Carol, nobody cared about prostitutes. We didn't have any kind of records of people or whatever back then. And if you were a prostitute back then, your life meant nothing. So if some prostitutes disappear, it's like big deal. I'm kind of thinking like how many victims were lured into that house. And I would have to guess between 20 or 30 women were murdered in that house because there was a lot of spirit activity. And I have a picture that I took with Bear inside the house on the windowsill. And you could actually see a woman's face screaming for help. And it was one of the victims.
And the father and his son, they were never held accountable for these crimes?
No, because back then, no one is going to point the finger at a very wealthy businessman.
He's going to get away with whatever he wants.
Exactly. He's high society, and no one's going to question anything. But this is the way society is. We'll look down upon these ladies, these prostitutes. But at the same time, who is going to judge him? He's got wealth. He's got power. He's got connections. And the story with him, and this is like years later that I learned with the mediums, the spirits were talking to the mediums and telling me this, is that he murdered his wife and daughter. And he raised his son to be just like him.
And we'll circle back to that because I don't know if I want to jump all the way to 22 years later yet.
Well, I think the part they're probably going to want to know is, okay, so how'd you die?
Yes. So talk about that too.
Okay, so I lived there from 87 to 89, went through all this paranormal experience for 2 years. It didn't stop. So I left and I thought maybe it would just go away in my life, but it followed me. That's the thing. It wasn't going to let go because he knew that I was going to be the one to battle him. So he was trying to figure out ways to kill me. And I look back again on my life and everything that I went through. And I've had so many near-death experiences in my life, almost 10 near-death experiences.
I mean, and that's incredible right there. You know, to have it happen once would be incredible. 10.
I know. Yeah. And I talk about some of them in the book. I didn't mention all of them, but death was just around the corner in my life. It was waiting for me. So eventually I met my fiance and we decided maybe it's time to move out of Montreal and let's go to Toronto and start a life. So we both went out there in 91 and everything was going good for the first 2 years. And then what happened is of January of 93, everything was changing now. It was becoming darker. Her cat just got sick and died and she was devastated by it. We were both on the point of both losing our jobs because things were changing. So it was quite stressful. And then it was, I'd say around October, where Bear started breathing funny one night. Bear would let me know when spirit was around, good or bad. He was my beacon. And when he took sick, I tried to save his life, but cancer was filling his lungs up and there was nothing left to do but put him down because he's suffering. There was nothing we could do to save him. The night before I had to take Bear and have him euthanized. And I remember waking up that morning and my neck was killing me on the left side. It was hurting me. I was in a lot of pain, but I brushed it off. First took Bear to see a specialist for a second opinion, and he basically said, there's nothing we can do. I mean, we can give him chemotherapy, but you're just prolonging it, and he's suffering. He can't breathe. So I took him home, and I remember sitting in the corner where Bear and I, like that's where Bear's spot was. He slept in this corner right by me. I could put my hand out. He could lick my hand. That's how close he was. I sat there, and I remember he was wrapped around my legs on the floor, and I was crying. Like just bawling. And Sandra at the time, she couldn't handle it. She was crying. But I knew like the poor guy was suffering. I couldn't do this to him anymore. And when I took him and I held his cheeks, like my hands were under his chin and my nose was on his nose because I wanted Bear to see me before he left. I wanted him to know that I'm not just going to leave you in a room and let this person do what he has to do. You know, I owe you this. And he went peacefully and I went home and I was sitting there. Just my mind was in a million different places. And I asked Sandra if she can massage my neck because it was really sore. So she starts to massage my neck and she feels a lump in my neck. And I'm like, oh God, what now? So I had a family doctor that was just down the street. I went to see him. He decided to do a chest x-ray, and I'm thinking like, no, the problem is on my neck. He said, just trust me. Anyways, he did a chest x-ray, called me back to do another chest x-ray, but he noticed a large cloud formation on my right lung. It was like 7 centimeters wide. It was massive. He knew what it was, but I had to go to the hospital, go through the whole procedure, biopsy, CAT scans, blood work, you name it. And then I was told, you have non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Now, at the time, I didn't think much of this because I was told, oh, yeah, it's a treatable cancer. You're okay. You're okay. But they didn't tell me that I had T cell, not B cell. Now, with B cell lymphoma, there's a good chance you're going to survive, but your T cells are your cancer fighters, and mine were infected with the cancer cells. So I had nothing to fight with. But at the time, I was optimistic, and they decided a protocol of 8 sessions of outpatient chemotherapy. And I remember my grandmother going through this and my friends going through this. And you know, I was about 5 days away of starting treatment. And I remember telling Sandra, it was a Sunday night. I said, listen, I said, you know what? I don't want to do this. And she's like all upset and crying. You know, and we're engaged to be married now. And it's like, I'm telling her, look, we got to cancel the wedding. I don't want to do this. You can go back, live with your mom in Montreal, and I'll live out my time here. And I was just down. I was feeling sorry for myself. I was giving up, and I had no idea what was about to change my life that night. And I know if you read the book, then I think you know what's coming.
Yes, but do you want to share it? Because it's your book.
That night I went to bed. I think it was around 3 o'clock in the morning. And I opened my eyes. I was sleeping on my stomach. And I reached my arm out, my right arm, to the right side of the bed in the corner where Bear slept. And I'm sad because he usually licks my hand to let me know, I'm right here. Don't worry about it. And he's not there. Just an empty space. And I'm just staring. And then suddenly, this woman's head appears from the floor. And she was really attractive at first until she opened her eyes. And her eyes were like serpent eyes. And then she started to smile at me, and her teeth were all jagged and sharp. Mm. And then her whole face looked like how a rattlesnake shakes. That's how her face was going. And I started to feel this effect where I was choking. But what she was doing is she was trying to suck my soul from my body, because they knew I was giving up, and that was their opportunity to take advantage of this. And I remember trying to break free from this connection with this spirit, and it was evil. And then something severed us, and I truly believe Bear did this, because animals could be spirit guides, and they're around us. And the connection got snapped. I broke out of this trance that I was in. I remember running into the living room. I got on my knees and I was praying to God, saying, whatever that thing was, please get rid of it. And please, God, I am sorry. I'll fight. Whatever I have to do, I will fight. That thing that showed up was the most terrifying thing at that point in my life that I experienced. So I went through all the treatment. And they stopped the 8th one because they weren't getting their results. They put me through 2 months of aggressive chemotherapy, which I almost died twice in the hospital from the treatment. That's the side effects. And then after that, I sat in a room with my oncologist and there was no change. So basically the chemo was not taking effect to the cancer. So I said to him, well, what do we do now? He says, we do nothing. I go, what do you mean we do nothing? He says, we can't keep giving you treatment because you're going to die. And I looked at him. I said, well, I'm going to die anyway. So what's the use? But they don't want to be held responsible for this. So he basically just said, well, you know, just enjoy whatever time you have. And I went home, saw my family. Everybody threw me a party. I got to say goodbye to everyone. Canceled the wedding because there was really no use getting married now. I've probably got about 3 months left to live. And I'm just going to live out my time with Sandra before I leave this world.
You didn't leave the world.
Well, I kind of did for a little bit of time.
Yeah. Yeah. And talk about that.
I went to sleep, you know, usually I go to bed about 11 or whatever. On this particular night, I heard this woman calling me. And it was Gloria. And I see these three lights coming down from the ceiling, beautiful lights, flickering. And she's telling me to reach to the lights. And it brings back a video I saw recently of people that are dying in a hospice. And what are they doing? They are reaching up with their arms, mm-hmm. and they're saying that there's angels up there calling them. And these are people that were more or less in a coma and just woke up. And I was doing the same thing in 94. And I remember stretching to reach these lights. And then the next thing is I'm out of my body. And I could see myself. I was floating over my fiance, and all the pain was gone. There was no suffering, but time stopped. It was like everything was in slow motion. And I'm looking at these three lights, and they're connected to my soul because it's energy on energy. And a voice is coming through the lights. It was a man's voice. And the first thing he said to me is that everything is going to be all right. And in my book, people will read, I had an out-of-body experience in a church. And I won't give that away, but that was the same voice that I heard back then that I was hearing now. And it told me that I have to go back. You're not done. And Carol, I didn't want to go back because I was suffering. And it wasn't from the cancer. It was from the treatment. And what they were doing to me in the hospital, I was like, I don't want to go back to that. And this love that I was feeling, it doesn't even exist here on earth. And I'm like, no, please take me home. Next thing you know, it disconnected me. And I could feel myself falling like G-forces. Like if you were on a roller coaster and you're going down so fast, you could feel like your soul is being pulled out of your body. It was so fast, and it was like jolt into my body, and I lunged up and a big gasp of air came out of me. And then my fiance woke up, and she thought I was having a heart attack. And I was trying to explain to her what I just experienced, and she was like, I don't want to hear it. She had no interest. She said, just go back to sleep. And I lied there for hours staring at the ceiling, hoping that these lights come back, but they didn't. And then 2 weeks later, I was in the hospital again, and the strangest thing, the cancer throughout my body was dead.
And no one could tell you why. It was like I think somebody referred to it as miraculous.
A divine intervention.
Yeah.
But if you try to explain that to the doctors back then, they would think you were crazy. This young doctor who talked to me, he said to me the next day, he goes, Sean, you were the talk of the hospital. All the doctors talked about your case. Because they knew medically, scientifically, it is impossible that I should survive. So they're asking me, what did you do? Now, I didn't want to share this with them because I felt I'd go from the oncology ward to the psych ward. Mm-hmm. But I just looked at him. I said, can I go home now? Like, I'm done here. Like, I have a life to live, and I want to get out here and start living it.
You know, that experience you had, there's just so many people who have had near-death experiences that are very similar to what you described, that they really want to go there. They don't want to go back. And they're like, no.
People around the world, Carol, from different parts of the country, the different race, different belief in religion or whatever, they're having the same experiences. It mm-hmm. doesn't discriminate. It's basically saying to us, we are all connected as one. And these are the experiences you have when you're about to leave to go home. Because I look at this place, Earth, like we're just renting it. It's not ours. We're just here to learn, to share. That's our purpose in life. But when we go home, we leave everything behind because it's not needed. Because when you're there on the other side, you don't need any of this stuff. And you have nothing but just unconditional love. So, like, why would you want to come back here?
Yeah, because it's not easy, especially like reading the book in your life in particular. Not easy. And, you know, it's a lot of adversity and fighting. And I think it's interesting. Most people I've talked to that, no, I will say every person I've ever talked to who has had a near-death experience, you kind of straddle two worlds, you know, and it changes who you are. And in your case, having that happen to you so many times, do you feel like those experiences really did change the trajectory of your life? Or were you always meant to be on that path?
The physical life, yes. The spiritual side, no. God had the plan for me to finish what I was supposed to do. This is why I survived all the near-death experiences, which I should have been dead 10 times over. I had terminal cancer. Impossible here in the physical world to survive that, but I did. And then he was preparing me for the biggest battle of my life, the ultimate sacrifice.
And this is where 22 years later from the haunted house, correct?
Yes.
Correct. So that is very interesting because I'm someone who lived in a haunted house when I was a kid, and I do think that it really kind of changes how you look at things in the world. And, you know, you think, okay, I lived in that house for 2 years. What could it have done to me? That's where it got real. Like, what could it do to you? You know, it was like really intense what you went through.
You know, I kept a lot of stuff to me because I knew people would think, like, this guy has lost it. And I've realized that it was a calling. It was time to show God, I'm ready now to do this for you. And I'm willing to die to do this for you. And because people here on earth, they have a hard time letting go of what they have, mm-hmm. their possessions. Mm-hmm. And they have to understand that these possessions are just temporary things. It's not yours. It was just given to you to see what you're going to do with it. But they don't see it that way. So it's all about me, 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 and I'm not going to share it. I'm going to keep it. But for me, it wasn't like that. It started in 2011 when someone suggested to, you know, open up a Facebook page, and I had a short story called The Night I Died. A lot of people liked it. And I was thinking, wow, okay, so... And I was telling people that I was working on my book, but I had no idea, Carol, what was coming. I'm going to tell you right now. I had no idea. Like, you were so right when you said the book wasn't ready. It was far away from being ready. And then I met Carolyn. She contacted me on Facebook. I loved her picture because it was Archangel Michael. And we hit it off. We start talking. She's originally from Arkansas, but at the time she was living in New York State, and she had a very deep Southern accent. So when she's talking, she's like, how y'all doing? That's how she would speak, right? And she was like very interesting to talk to, but she was holding back because she knew what she had to tell me, but she wasn't supposed to do that. I was supposed to learn this. So the thing is, in my book, when my dad passed away in 2005, the night before he passed away, my father was terrified. He was crying to me on the phone. He thought he was going to hell. Oh my gosh. And I said to my dad, I said, Dad, I've got it worked out for you. He goes, you do? I said, I've got it arranged. These people are going to greet you. Don't be worried. Don't be afraid. They're going to take you to a place where you're going to be okay. He said, you promise? I promise, Dad. And I said, now you need to make a promise with me. He goes, what's that? I said, when my time comes, Dad, I want you to be by the fishing hole with Jerry, who is my best friend. He died at 38 with cancer. And my dogs. We love our dogs. The dogs got to be there. So my dad promised me this. Next day, he passed away. Now, 6 years later, 2011, I'm talking to Carolyn one night. First thing she says to me, your father is very proud of you. Now, I'm sitting there thinking, well, anybody would just say that. So I let it go. Then she says to me, those people you sent for him, they took care of him. And I was kind of like taken away by this, like, how did she know that? And then she says to me, oh, by the way, your father's at the fishing hole with the fishing poles. She was communicating with my father. But the thing about Carolyn, and it's a word I'm going to use, validation. People will claim to be a psychic or a medium, but they're not really. They're just there to take advantage of you so they can take your money. And they're out there. And I feel sorry for them because the universe is recording this and they're going to answer for what they did. But the real ones, they don't do this for money. It's not about money. It's about the message. It's about the work with the light. She was real. But she was put there because she knew what was coming. She knew that I was going to be called upon for the battle. And how that happened is that we were getting close to Halloween. And I don't know, Carol, what popped into my head, but I thought, you know what would be really neat if I write a short story called The Haunted House, The Whole Story. People love a good ghost story. So I write the story, but I'm thinking before I post it on Facebook, maybe I should like find the picture of the haunted house. And I had these old photo albums back from the 80s. And back in the day, we didn't have digital cameras or anything. You actually had to take the film out of the camera, go to the drugstore, get it processed. And about a day later, you go back and you pick it up. It's like, that's the way it was.
And then you would see if you got any good pictures.
Exactly. You know, like sometimes you get, oh, is that my thumb?
Exactly. And did I waste money developing that roll of film? Because there's nothing good on it.
Oh, my God. I know. Like sometimes you'd be going like every picture didn't turn out well. So I found the picture of the house and I thought, okay, I'm going to scan it. I'm going to put it with the story. I'm going to post it. And I did. And I left it for about 4 hours. And I came back and I was curious to see if I was hoping people would comment about the story, not the picture. And these mediums around the world were commenting about the picture. Some telling me, Sean, you need to stay away from this. This is dark. This is dangerous. It's evil. And then one said, I could see the spirits in the window. And I was like, what? So I start to examine the picture. I see my bedroom on the right side of the picture. And I look up to the second story window and there's the dark spirit. And you could see his face. It's just gray, evil looking. And there's faces around him. And then if you go over to the far left second story window, you see all these other spirits in the window looking at me. So it was like when I took the picture in 1988, they were all there looking at me.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation with Sean Barry Farewell about his book, Fallen from the Light. You can find the book on Amazon, then you can choose from the beautiful color edition or the more budget-friendly black and white version. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, then become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks and find everything there. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you for listening.
Hello, hello, I'm Malcolm Gladwell, host of the podcast Smart Talks with IBM. I recently sat down with IBM's chairman and CEO, Arvind Krishna, and I asked him, how can companies use AI to its fullest potential to create smarter business?
My one advice to them, pick areas you can scale. Don't pick the shiny little toys on the side.
Mm-hmm. For example,
if anybody has more than 10% of what they had for customer service 10 years ago, they're already 5 years behind. If anybody is not using AI to make their developers who write software 30% more productive today, with the goal of being 70% more productive.
Yeah. Wow.
So we are not asking our clients to be the first experiment on it. We say, you can leverage what we did. We're happy to bring out all our learnings, including what needs to change in the process, because the biggest change is not technology. It's getting people to accept that there's a different way to do things.
To listen to the full conversation, visit ibm.com/smarttalks.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps.
In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hello, hello. I'm Malcolm Gladwell, host of Smart Talks with IBM. I recently spoke with IBM's new director of research, Jay Gambetta. We discussed his vision for the future of quantum computing.
At IBM Research, what we always do is answer what is the future of computing, whether it's coming up with new algorithms, coming up with better AI, coming up with quantum, or coming up with just how do different accelerators go together. It's our DNA to answer the question of what is the future.
Isn't it a perfect problem for IBM because you kind of need to have a legacy of building stuff?
Yes.
Building actual physical machines.
Yeah, it's why I came to IBM. I wanted the experience, the culture of building hard things that others have not done before.
Mm-hmm. Where do you imagine we are in the timeline of this technology? There will come a point when it will mature, right?
Yeah.
My cell phone is a mature technology at this point. How far are we from that point with quantum?
By 2029, we'll build the first fault-tolerant quantum computer. That is one that can run a very, very large problem.
To learn how IBM is building the future of computing, visit ibm.com/quantum.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hello, hello. I'm Malcolm Gladwell, host of the podcast Smart Talks with IBM. I recently sat down with IBM's chairman and CEO, Arvind Krishna, and I asked him, how can companies use AI to its fullest potential to create smarter business?
My one advice to them, pick areas you can scale. Don't pick the shiny little toys on the side.
Mm-hmm. For example,
if anybody has more than 10% of what they had for customer service 10 years ago, they're already 5 years behind. If anybody is not using AI to make their developers who write software 30% more productive today, with the goal of being 70% more productive.
Yeah. Wow.
So we are not asking our clients to be the first experiment on it. We say, you can leverage what we did. We're happy to bring out all our learnings, including what needs to change in the process, because the biggest change is not technology. It's getting people to accept that there's a different way to do things.
To listen to the full conversation, visit ibm.com/smarttalks.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's
a social casino.
Download the Modo Casino app today.
Hello, hello. I'm Malcolm Gladwell, host of Smart Talks with IBM. I recently spoke with IBM's new director of research, Jay Gambetta. We discussed his vision for the future of quantum computing.
At IBM Research, what we always do is answer what is the future of computing, whether it's coming up with new algorithms, coming up with better AI, coming up with quantum, or coming up with just how do different accelerators go together. It's our DNA to answer the question of what is the future.
Isn't it a perfect problem for IBM because you kind of need to have a legacy of building stuff?
Yes.
Building actual physical machines.
Yeah, it's why I came to IBM. I wanted the experience, the culture of building hard things that others have not done before.
Mm-hmm. Where do you imagine we are in the timeline of this technology? There will come a point when it will mature, right?
Yeah.
My cell phone is a mature technology at this point. How far are we from that point with quantum?
By 2029, we'll build the first fault-tolerant quantum computer. That is one that can run a very, very large problem.
To learn how IBM is building the future of computing, visit ibm.com/quantum.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Modo Casino. Modo's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily, and the best part, guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Modo, America's social casino. Play for free on Modo.us.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
Hello, hello. I'm Malcolm Gladwell, host of the podcast Smart Talks with IBM. I recently sat down with IBM's chairman and CEO, Arvind Krishna, and I asked him, how can companies use AI to its fullest potential to create smarter business?
My one advice to them, pick areas you can scale. Don't pick the shiny little toys on the side.
Mm-hmm.
For example,
if anybody has more than 10% of what they had for customer service 10 years ago, they're already 5 years behind it. If anybody is not using AI to make their developers who write software 30% more productive today, with the goal of being 70% more productive.
Yeah, wow.
So we are not asking our clients to be the first experiment on it. We say, you can leverage what we did. We're happy to bring out all our learnings, including what needs to change in the process, because the biggest change is not technology. It's getting people to accept that there's a different way to do things.
To listen to the full conversation, visit ibm.com/smarttalks.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Modo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Modo is U.S. owned and operated. Modo, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Modo.us.
Modo Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
Hello, hello. I'm Malcolm Gladwell, host of the podcast Smart Talks with IBM. I recently sat down with IBM's chairman and CEO, Arvind Krishna, and I asked him, how can companies use AI to its fullest potential to create smarter business?
My one advice to them, pick areas you can scale. Don't pick the shiny little toys on the side.
Mm-hmm.
For example,
if anybody has more than 10% of what they had for customer service 10 years ago, they're already 5 years behind it. If anybody is not using AI to make their developers who write software 30% more productive today, with the goal of being 70% more productive.
Yeah, wow.
So we are not asking our clients to be the first experiment on it. We say, you can leverage what we did. We're happy to bring out all our learnings, including what needs to change in the process, because the biggest change is not technology. It's getting people to accept that there's a different way to do things.
To listen to the full conversation, visit ibm.com/smarttalks.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hello, hello. I'm Malcolm Gladwell, host of Smart Talks with IBM. I recently spoke with IBM's new director of research, Jay Gambetta. We discussed his vision for the future of quantum computing.
At IBM Research, what we always do is answer what is the future of computing, whether it's coming up with new algorithms, coming up with better AI, coming up with quantum, or coming up with just how do different accelerators go together. It's our DNA to answer the question of what is the future.
Isn't it a perfect problem for IBM because you kind of need to have a legacy of building stuff?
Yes.
Building actual physical machines.
Yeah, it's why I came to IBM. I wanted the experience, the culture of building hard things that others have not done before.
Mm-hmm. Where do you imagine we are in the timeline of this technology? There will come a point when it will mature, right?
Yeah.
My cell phone is a mature technology at this point. How far are we from that point with quantum?
By 2029, we'll build the first fault-tolerant quantum computer. That is one that can run a very, very large problem.
To learn how IBM is building the future of computing, visit ibm.com/quantum.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hello, hello. I'm Malcolm Gladwell, host of Smart Talks with IBM. I recently spoke with IBM's new director of research, Jay Gambetta. We discussed his vision for the future of quantum computing.
At IBM Research, what we always do is answer what is the future of computing, whether it's coming up with new algorithms, coming up with better AI, coming up with quantum, or coming up with just how do different accelerators go together. It's our DNA to answer the question of what is the future.
Isn't it a perfect problem for IBM because you kind of need to have a legacy of building stuff?
Yes.
Building actual physical machines.
Yeah, it's why I came to IBM. I wanted the experience, the culture of building hard things that others have not done before.
Mm-hmm. Where do you imagine we are in the timeline of this technology? There will come a point when it will mature, right?
Yeah.
My cell phone is a mature technology at this point. How far are we from that point with quantum?
By 2029, we'll build the first fault-tolerant quantum computer. That is one that can run a very, very large problem.
To learn how IBM is building the future of computing, visit ibm.com/quantum.
Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Moto Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Allergy season always has a way of sneaking up on you. One minute you're listening to your favorite podcast, the next it's nonstop sneezing and a runny nose. That's why it's essential to keep Kleenex Ultra Soft tissues on hand. They're silky soft for up to 100% irritation-free skin and allergist approved. So when allergies hit, and they will, be ready with Kleenex Ultra Soft tissues. For whatever happens next, grab Kleenex.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Here's the truth. You could literally be adored by everyone and then come home and still get completely ignored by your own cat. It's classic cat behavior. But new Shiba Premium Puree is a lickable treat that changes all that. They're protein-rich, made with bone broth, and have the smooth, creamy texture cats go crazy for, especially when it's hand-fed. Yeah, it's more than a treat. It's a fast pass to favorite human status. So feed your cat Shiba and go from totally ignored to truly adored in just 12 days, guaranteed, or your money back. Learn more at Shiba.com.